We're back once again, only on its last call. Last call of the alcohol, only on the last call podcast.com. And once again, joining us here on the location, he's getting ready for the draft. He has his 7-round mock draft, you know, already written out. He's editing it, he's fiddling with it, and he has more wide receivers and tackles going the first round than you can shake a stick at. Once again, we're blessed to have on the show. I give you from Arrowhead Addicts. I give you Price Carter. So Price, will start off here with so what if, supposedly this is the deepest draft in a long time for wide receivers. How deep is it? And how do you view this draft in terms of like elite level wide receivers?
Yeah, it is certainly an incredibly deep draft at wide receiver. And I think the thing that's probably the best representation of that actually isn't the top of the class. Obviously the top of the class is very, very talented with guys like Marvin Harrison Jr., Rome Odunze, Malik Nabers, but it's really just the variety and the depth that can be found on day two. And even into day three, I think that there's going to be some impact players taken. And even more special is just the variety of players that are out there. If you want slot guys, if you want yak guys, if you want vertical stretchers, if you want contested catch guys, there are all sorts of different varieties of players out there that really fit a need, which I do think is an advantage of this class, is that teams can kind of find a specific need that they can fill. And honestly, if you told me 7 wide receivers went in the first round, I wouldn't be surprised. If you told me only 5 went, I also wouldn't be surprised, just because of the depth that a lot of teams think that they can wait until the day two to grab it. So there's kind of, you know, you can always find like the name brand version and then like the Costco brand version too. Like, oh, you want a guy who's a pristine route runner who can get open anywhere on the field, you know, slot predominant. Well, you can get Ladd McConkey in the first round, or you can get Ricky Pearsall in the second round, or you could even go to day three and get a player like, like Malik Washington out of Virginia. So there's really a wide variety of players who can do a wide variety of things in this class at the receiver position.
So let's talk about the big debate right now: Malik Nabers or Marvin Harrison Jr. I mean, I've heard the arguments, and as Albert Breer pointed out, there's a lot of people who, you know, other draft people, and if a coach who feel that Nabers is the more explosive wide receiver, he might be better for Marvin Harrison for the new NFL game, which is, hey, we can't go downfield, so, you know, spread it out like what the Dolphins do, just, you know, quick 3-step drop, you know, throw it over the middle. Let the guy get you a lot of yards after catch. Let the guy, you know, basically put him in motion. Who do you like of it too? What separates Nabers from Harrison in terms of just the potential?
I think here's the thing. And in this class, there's a lot of this actually happening. I think it's happening with Caleb Williams. I think it's happening with Marvin Harrison. I think it's happening with Drake May a little bit as well. And even like Olu Fashanu a little bit, the left tackle we'll talk about here in a little bit. It's prospect fatigue. For years now, we've known that Marvin Harrison Jr. was going to be a top pick. I think one thing that people will look at is, as far as their 2023 seasons go, Nabers did have the better season. However, Marvin Harrison's 2022 was incredible. And, you know, this just in, Kyle McCord wasn't the best quarterback that Ohio State has had recently. I think when it comes to Marvin Harrison Jr., that is who I'm going to lean towards. The Nabers explosive, and honestly, with these two guys, like, I don't think there's a wrong answer. I think obviously they're both very talented prospects, and I think it kind of might just depend on the landing spot and what the team is needing. Obviously, the Cardinals are kind of where the Marvin Harrison Jr. discussion starts, although the Pats could ultimately decide to take him. If I'm the Pats and I'm sitting at pick 3 and I've decided I'm not going quarterback, Nabers might be my guy, because the Patriots have just, for decades, never had an explosive game-changing wide receiver with speed. It just feels like they always have these slow, shifty guys that can't separate, or like the slot shifty guys like your Edelmans or your Amendolas. However, you know, if they take Marvin Harrison Jr., I'm not sure there's anything wrong with that either. If you're the Cardinals, it feels like Marvin Harrison Jr. might be the better option. You've got the QB in place. Not that Marvin Harrison Jr. can't separate. Not that he's not fast. He's been tracked at 23 miles per hour on the GPS. But he just feels like the slightly more complete player who can win anywhere on the field. I also think, you know, some of the things that he does well kind of compare similarly to what Larry Fitzgerald did at one point. That's been one of the high-end comparisons for him. So I'm going to do a slight lean to Marvin Harrison Jr. Although if you told me, like, obviously I focus a lot on the Chiefs for my coverage. If the Chiefs got to pick one of the two, I could easily see them going neighbors and not being upset about it just because of the skill set.
Well, let's say this way is a lot of drafts happen. The first four picks are quarterbacks, whether it's trade, whether it's, just the way it is for a team, let's say like the Chargers. And hey, they might, all of a sudden have, hey, we have the number five pick. Like for a guy like Herbert, where he can do all these things here. And with a guy like even Harbaugh, who's more conservative, is it, what fits better for that? I mean, how much does, in terms of those two, is like, all right, well, Marvin Harrison's great for downfield, but he's a big guy. We're not sure what his speed is because, well, he didn't run the four, he didn't run any of his stuff, which that's right. He's going to be a top five pick at worst. Neighbors already 4.35. You're looking at a high jump. He is just explosive as hell. How much will go into our in terms of the offense? All right. Do we want to press two deep safeties, or do we want to just have a guy who, a la Tyreek Hill, move him about, create one-on-one matches, try to get him against a linebacker and let him go nuts?
Yeah, I think one of the things that kind of matters for that too is one thing that I think is just a little underrated with Marvin Harrison Jr. is that while he's not doing this training for the draft process, he's just training to play football, which, like, last time we saw that was really Jamar Chase, who basically did nothing throughout the process because of COVID and everything. So that whole time he just basically spent practicing football instead of practicing like the combine and things that aren't necessarily football. Marvin Harrison Jr., obviously there's the NFL bloodlines there too. I think that he's going to be a pro's pro. I personally think, Jim Harbaugh's planned against Marvin Harrison Jr., played against him for years. I could definitely see that playing a factor into it too. And also, I think like the Chargers' needs at wide receiver are just yes, they have plenty of need. For them, I would think that Marvin Harrison Jr. is the more complete player. I would say as a Chiefs fan, I would prefer them not get Marvin Harrison Jr. to Justin Herbert. That's pretty filthy to start out with. Again, I could also see the speed element of neighbors. I think Harrison's just the slightly more complete route runner. And he just wins in so many ways. He can, take a bubble screen 75 yards to the house. He can win in contested catch situations. He can separate in intermediate parts of the field. There's really no place that he loses at.
You mentioned before, possible seven, and there's guys who are fast as hell, a la Brian Thomas Jr., once again, teammate of LSU. There is Xavier Worthy, fast man to combine. You also have guys who are sort of in between, the Ladd McConkleys, Xavier Leggetts. I've even seen Keon Coleman sneak into the first round of some drafts because of the height and the size here. How much is it going to go into the offense itself in terms of, all right, do teams want a possession guy? Do they want somebody who can stretch the field? Do they want that Tyreek Hill kind of wide receiver? Like how tough is it predicting like how many might go? Because there's so many weapons, and all of a sudden teams are going, all right, we no longer can just rely on one or two wide receivers. Good teams now, unless you have that elite level quarterback, need like three wide receivers you can all, actually play and get yards after the catch.
Yeah, I think honestly the w best way to look at this is just going to be what is the demand in the market at the time. So we've seen very frequently runs on positions happen. Last year, as a Chiefs fan, standing in Kansas City, watching the draft happen in front of my eyes at Union Station, I was salivating around pick 20 or 19 at Jackson Smith and Jigba, Quentin Johnston, Zay Flowers, all the wide receiver prospects are still on the board. A pretty big need for the Chiefs. And then in sequence, four of them went right off the board. That tends to happen. We know that there's going to be probably three wide receivers taken in the top 10 in this class. Brian Thomas Jr. feels like the one guy that, again, I would not be shocked if he's taken 12th or 13th. The speed, and I mean, he basically run 1/10 slower than Xavier Worthy at 45 pounds more heavy. That is really valuable. After those guys, I think it does kind of start becoming more fit based and more role and scheme based. For me, I've got five players that I think are have true like the skill set to be a wide receiver one. My fifth in there, so Marvin Harrison Jr., Nabers Odunze, Brian Thomas Jr., and then A.D. Mitchell is the last one, where the physical frame, the ability, the productivity in college, all those things line up that, like, if you told me this player could be a legitimate wide receiver one in the NFL. Now, would it surprise me if some of these other guys developed into that? No, but I think those are the most fail-safe prospects. Then you get into someone like Ladd McConkey, who, the goal of football is to get open if you're a receiver, and he does that at a high level. There's also been a few injury concerns, and some of his production is based upon yak and kind of screen routes. I do think that, there's a lot of offenses that he would really eat in, especially if they have other options. He's a frequent mock to the Chiefs. I would love to see him just being able to get open in the intermediate area and just feast upon man coverage, because so many teams try to play man against the Chiefs because they know they can't play zone against Kelce or Rice. Then you get into players who are more like physical projections, like Xavier Leggett, who has hit over 23 miles per hour on the GPS tracker this year. He's a big, powerful size speed combo, but really only 1 year of production. A lot of that has been due to just kind of the changing of the guard at South Carolina. He really had some great connection with Spencer Rattler this year. And he's a little bit better of a route runner than people might give him credit for. But he's also, again, a bit raw and also a little bit older for a prospect just because of his path. Then you've got your field stretchers. I would not be surprised if Troy Franklin out of Oregon or Xavier Worthy went in the first round. Both guys are very fast. Both guys were pretty darn productive in college. Both guys are very small. That is a concern. Worthy is one of the smaller wide receiver prospects to come out. We've seen this work last year with Tank Dell, but also Tank Dell got hurt run blocking at the goal line. Does that happen to a bigger guy? I'm not sure. It was kind of a weird fluke injury, but that's something to be concerned about. We're seeing more and more small guys have success, like Zay Flowers or Jordan Addison, but it really does kind of come down to what are you looking for. And then you got those guys who are slot guys, like Roman Wilson, Jalen McMillan, Ricky Pearsall. A lot of those guys all kind of fit into that role. So yeah, I think because of the high thought of this wide receiver class, that people are expecting a record number to go in the first round, and I'm not necessarily sure that's the case, just because I'm not sure that every player is a fit for every team. The Bills are a team that comes to mind of a team that could really use a vertical field stretcher, because I'm not sure Stephon Diggs is really that type of player anymore as he's begun to age. So they're a team that, Troy Franklin, Xavier Worthy, Brian Thomas Jr., if he's there, makes a lot of sense for.
Talk about one position. We'll go back to this in a bit, but let's talk about one position where we know if it's going to be a ton of guys being drafted. That's offensive tackle. And I'll start off with taste great, less filling. Is it Joe Alt of Notre Dame, who father was, a stud tackle? He's a stud tackle, and everybody seems to love that he's this sort of perfect left tackle in terms of his, technique or everything. Or is it Olufoshana, who the big Penn State guy, who's this massive guy, has burst on the scene the last year and a half, looks the part in terms of the physicality. I mean, who is the guy? I mean, because I've seen some people say all this guy, and now Fashano's getting that push because he's just like a mammoth.
Yeah, it's been a little bit interesting. I think most people this year on consensus boards had Fashanu over Alt. Something that's worth mentioning with Joe Alt is that he is a converted tight end. He moves like a tight end. It's special watching him do his kick step or move in the open field. The thing that I think separated Alt from Fashanu this year is both players came into the season with areas that they needed to improve upon. Alt specifically was consistency in pass protection sets. Fashanu was kind of finishing. Sometimes he was susceptible to power rushers and then like run defense or run offense as well, finishing run blocks, getting downfield and making plays. Alt is aesthetically just a little bit more pleasing to watch as a blocker too. He does have that mean streak. And also they're both just, big towering players. I mean, I think Joe Alt is 6'7", if I remember right. Both of these guys, again, I'm not sure that there's necessarily a wrong answer. I'm going to lean towards alt because alt in 2023 was able to improve upon those concerns. There was things going into the season that he needed to get better at, and he did. We're watching this huge guy. I was looking taking a look at the right tackle actually for Notre Dame earlier this week with Blake Fisher. But alt is the tallest guy on the offensive line, but still has his hips dropped and has the most leverage of any player on the line. The technique is just flawless. He's a smooth mover. And again, I know we're kind of going back to the same thing, but you love those NFL bloodlines too, where you know he's going to come in and be a pro's pro. And when you get into those top 10 picks, not that I think Olufashanu can't be that, but when you get into those top 10, top five picks, those franchise altering picks, you want the most safe prospect that has the least chance of busting. And I feel very good that Joe Alt is going to be able to do that.
How tough is it figuring out, though, like if you're going to be a bust or not? Because when you get to the pro game, defenses get a lot more craftier. You know, whether it's guys like Minter, whether it's McDonald, whether it's even Spagnuolo, they find ways to really confuse tackles. Whether it's line up six guys on the line all standing, whether it's blitzing cornerbacks, whether it's delayed blitzes. You don't see that in college a lot because just the talent's not there. Most of these guys, could probably take on two guys at once because they're just much better. So when you're figuring this out, you, every other scout and coach, how tough is it figuring out, guys like not just Fashanu and Alt, but even guys like Talese Fuaga from Oregon State, Tyler Guyton all the way from Oklahoma, Jordan Morgan from Arizona, J.C. Latham, Alabama, and trying to figure out, okay, are they going to be a bust or not? Can they play left tackle or are they strictly right tackles? Like, how do you figure this out?
Yeah, I think, you bring up an interesting point about ceiling and floor of players. And I think that's a really good point to bring up with this tackle class. My tackle rankings, they factor that in for this class because I do think that there are some players who are extremely safe prospects in this class and should be rated higher simply upon their floor because I feel like they could potentially play numerous positions along the offensive line. So you've got your pedigree left tackles, which are Fashanu and Alt. Then you've got Fuaga, Talese Fuaga out of Oregon State. Similar rise to Darnell Wright's last year in the draft process. And also kind of a similar profile, big, powerful, run-blocking right tackle that has a mean streak, but he's not a left tackle. Fuaga could, if he needed to, kick inside. If you're a team who just needs quality offensive line play and you don't really care, Fuaga makes sense because Fuagu could play left guard, right guard, or right tackle. Three out of the five right there. A team that comes to mind for him would be like the Jets, where you've got two tackles who are both over the age of like 33 and injury prone. There's a real shot that, he starts at guard at the beginning of the year and is kicking outside by the end of the year. Some other players that come to mind are Troy Fatanu from Washington, left tackle. A little bit interesting situation with him at Washington where he played left tackle. Roger Rosengarten switched to right tackle when Michael Penix became the quarterback because of Penix being left-handed. Rosengarten switched to the right side to protect his blind side. But Fatanu, for a lot of this draft process, was looked at as a guard just because he's a little bit shorter. A lot of people looked at his frame and saw guard. But then he had some really nice arm measurements at the combine, over 33-inch arms. So his movement skills and everything, I think he could play all five positions. Some teams were even looking at him as a center in this class. Then you've got some players, J.C. Latham, who you mentioned. He's another guy that I think should get the opportunity to play right tackle, but could even kick inside if he needed to. He, again, is a big, powerful frame. He's bigger bodied. He tends to lean a little bit. He kind of got picked on a little bit in that college football playoff game against Michigan. But then you get into, to me, those guys, Fatanu, Fuaga, Alt, Fashanu, and I think most of those guys are kind of true plug and play. I would feel great about starting them week one. Once you get through those names, I'm sorry, I left out Amarius Mims, who is probably the most interesting player in the first round. Amarius Mims, big giant man who is 6'5", 340 pounds, but looks like Thanos from the Avengers. I mean, this guy is just a true athletic freak, might be one of the most physically gifted tackle prospects we've ever seen. However, he's played 10 games of college football. those 10 games, especially that tape against Ohio State in the college football championship in 2022, some of the best tape you're going to find of a tackle. He's incredibly raw, but his athleticism is so elite that it's hard to give up on him, even just because of 10 games. And then you factor in he missed a big part of this year due to an injury, and then he injured himself performing at the combine. He has the widest range of outcomes. If you told me he was pick number 10, I wouldn't be shocked. If you told me he was on the board at pick 32, I also would not be shocked, just because of the wide variety of outcomes. But he has just pure, unteachable length and strength. After those guys, Kingsley Suamutia, Tyler Guyton, those type of guys, that's where I think these start becoming more of projects where they might do better getting some time on the bench before starting.
What's the difference between a left tackle and a right tackle? I mean, because most, and I know that it sounds stupid when I say that, but you know what I'm saying. There's probably coaches who are going, Felice Fuguaga. Yeah, but he's listed as a right tackle, but hey, he's big, he's strong, he's powerful, he's athletic. We can turn to a left tackle. Same with, Lathan and Tyler Guyton. They're looking, going, well, these guys fit the bill. They're big, they're athletic, they have nimble feet. We can turn them into a left tackle. What is the difference? Like, why is it that some guys are left tackles and the other guys are just right tackles? Like, is it mentality? Is it footwork? Like, what is it that someone, when you look at a guy like Amarius Mims, or even, as we said, Talis Fuaga, it's like, all right, well, they're not as good as Fashan because he's a left tackle and they're only right tackles.
Yeah, I do think you bring up a good point, especially because we saw this whenever Von Miller kind of was at the height of his powers. There used to be this thing where the left tackle, was the blind side, like the movie where, the best tackle played the left side to protect the quarterback's blind side. And that's, really a thing of the past in the NFL. The best pass rushers are going to line up on your worst offensive lineman. The Chiefs do that all the time with Chris Jones. I think the thing that is the most important is just where does the player feel the most comfortable and where have they spent the most time? Mekhi Becton comes to mind a little bit, played left tackle all throughout college and then was asked to move to right tackle whenever he was drafted, or one of the, I can't remember if it was his first or second year, and he ended up injuring himself. And he attributed some of that to using a side of his body that he wasn't as familiar with. You want a player to be able to come in and be successful at the things that they know what to do. Troy Fatanu comes to mind with this conversation because he played left side, but he wasn't protecting the blind side. Does that really matter? Honestly, probably not, especially since he's been playing on the left side of the line. Ultimately, it's just going to come down to the player and what they feel comfortable with. Most tackles, they've, tried some left tackle and some right tackle. There's still that discrepancy in the market, though it's closing as far as right tackle contracts and left tackle contracts. But I think it just comes down to the player. I think in general, your can't miss top tackle prospects are going to be left tackles. I know Darnell Wright went at 10 last year, and I think, Fuaga has that potential this year. But I think in general, some of that is based upon team need as well. You look at a team like the Chargers. Should they take Joe Alt, a can't miss left tackle prospect, and kick him over to right tackle because they have the Rashawn Slater? Or should they move Rashawn Slater, a guy who's been an all pro at left tackle? Or do you take a player like JC Latham or Tulisa Fuaga, who is a very high floor right tackle, to set up your tandem? Again, I just think it comes back to the player. What are they comfortable with, and what are your roster needs?
How many tackles go in the first round? I mean, because you look in on paper, it's like 13 teams need offensive linemen anywhere from Tennessee to, New Orleans Saints, possibly even the Dallas Cowboys, New York Jets probably still need a right tackle. I've even seen where it's like the last three picks, Baltimore, San Francisco, Chiefs might go offensive tackle. How many might go, and how shocked should we be that you might see guys like Mims and Kingsley Suamatalia go much higher than we expect because teams start going freaking out, going, oh crap, we need offensive linemen. We saw what happened to the Browns last year where they lost both of their guys and they got killed in the playoffs. We need tackles. We need tackles. Just try to tackle, damn it.
I think the nitty-gritty here is going to be just kind of how we qualify some players who have a chance to be drafted in the first round. Graham Barton is a player out of Duke who played left tackle at Duke, but most of the league is viewing as an interior offensive line prospect, particularly a center. Another player that comes to mind is Jordan Morgan out of Arizona. He played left tackle, sub 33-inch arms. Good chance that he is going to be looked at as an interior presence as well. Now, certain teams aren't threshold teams. Chiefs fans love to mock Jordan Morgan to the Chiefs at 32 because he's usually on the board. And I'm telling you, the Chiefs will not draft Jordan Morgan to play tackle. Could I see them taking him at pick 32? Sure, because they have three interior offensive linemen who could hit free agency next year, and Creed Humphrey, Trey Smith, and Joe Tooney. And they also could use depth at tackle. So Jordan Morgan, you know, maybe he's a starting guard in 2025 and kicks out to tackle if someone gets injured. But, you know, if you include those guys as tackles, it could be as many as eight or nine. I feel pretty good about a team taking Jordan Morgan. I know the Ravens were really interested in him. I think like his floor is just really high as a player. I think he does have really great pass block movement. Appears to be a really high character guy, was a team captain. I think a team that maybe not, you know, might try him at right tackle or just love his high floor as an interior presence. Graham Barton, I think he's an interior offensive lineman. So I think it could be eight or nine, honestly, however you look at it. We haven't talked about Tyler Guyton either. You know, you brought him up out of Oklahoma. He's, you know, he's played predominantly right tackle at Oklahoma. He's not played almost any left tackle, but he is just a size speed combo, an elite athlete, has struggled to stay on the field with some injuries, and he's pretty raw. I have Kingsley Suamataia over him. Suamataia, you know you're going to get a high-end run blocker because of BYU's RPO heavy pass offense. He's not the most complete pass protector, but he's played left and right tackle. He's the cousin of Penei Sewell, the Lions right tackle. So you love that. He's been training with him as well. So I think Suamataia is a little bit more complete prospect right now than Guyton. There's a little bit more projection going on with Guyton. But honestly, you look at a player like Anton Harrison, who was taken in the first round last year. I'm not sure he would be above any of these guys. And he was taken in the 20s last year. So again, it just speaks to the depth of this tackle class.
Last two questions before I let you go. Last question before I let you go. We mentioned wide receiver. It's deep. What is when your team and you know how tough is it trying to figure out can the guy play? Because we everybody looks at the speed and they go, "Ooh, wow, hey, Xavier Worthy, he's pretty damn fast." Well, we can do a lot of things with him. Or if you look at you know Xavier Legette and they go, "Ooh, he's pretty fast." Next thing you know, all of a sudden people start drafting these guys because they have their speed year. We've seen that a lot from Kadarius Toney to N'Keal Harry to, you know, even back in the day, Alexander Wright, where, oh, guy's fast. We need to have him play fast. So, how do you know if a guy's good? Like when you're watching video and these teams are not going to be doing that now, they're going to be watching the tape and everything. How tough is it focusing on all of like the just the regular intangibles rather than, oh, damn, he's fast. Look at those feet. Oh, we could just. And next thing you know, as you said, Quentin Johnson, Tyreek Thornton are getting drafted high, and people are like, "Oh my God, but they can't catch!" But they are speedy. But they can't catch.
It is tough because I think we've seen in the league that just being fast, like John Ross, it's not everything, right? Like speed is unteachable. The league will always covet it, but there is much more to being a prospect than just straight line speed. I think what I come back to, especially with wide receivers, is players, they need to, it's kind of like, you know, like chips at a poker table. They either need to have a nice variety of lots of chips, or they need to have a lot of one chip. I keep coming back to Sky Moore just because of the Chiefs. Looking at him as a prospect, where we went wrong, where the Chiefs went wrong, is just that Sky Moore does not have any dominant wide receiver trait. He has some traits that are translatable, but none of them are elite traits. He doesn't have enough speed. He doesn't have enough spot size. He doesn't separate well enough. He's not a technician. He's not a contested catch guy. Sometimes you get a player who doesn't have all those traits, but he's got a lot of one trait, like an Xavier Worthy, where teams are going to be willing to take a risk on him because he just has an unteachable skill. And obviously, speed is different because even players like Marquez Valdes-Scantling for the Chiefs last year, who was abysmal for his contract, he still provided value to the team by commanding safety respect. So that's one. Speed, especially, is that it's just always going to be overvalued because you can't have an impact on the play without even necessarily being a true threat just by pulling coverage. But then you get into, you know, route running. You've got your route running technicians like a Ladd McConkey, like a Ricky Pearsall, guys who are just very complete route runners who are just going to get open and beat man coverage. Then you've got your, you know, your true blue chip guys or purple chip prospects, you know, the top of the top, like Marvin Harrison Jr. and Roma Dunze, who are just excellent route runners, but they can win in contested catches, but they have enough speed. They're surprising in yak ability. I think, you know, Rashee Rice this year really kind of showed a lot when it comes to teams looking at players and seeing what they do best. There's a lot of people who are really confused by the Rashee Rice pick for the Chiefs last year. And part of that was because Rashee Rice played a contested catch down the field, go up and get it, you know, X receiver role at SMU. And the Chiefs turned him into a yak machine. And that was something that they saw in the prospect. That's where it really gets tough, where you look at a player and what he's been and see if you can turn them into something else. And frankly, I think that's what great teams do. You got a player like Malachi Corley out of Western Kentucky, probably the best yak player in this class. That's a really valuable role. And there's going to be a team that takes Corley. And, you know, a lot of people are pretty low on him because a large majority of his production is yak, and he's not necessarily a down the field, complete intermediate route runner, but he's big and strong and he's explosive as hell with the ball in his hands. And you can find ways to get the ball into hands of players that are good. And good offenses can do that.
Well, there you have it, ladies and gentlemen. Once again, we're always pleased to have on the show. I give you from Arrowhead Ag itself, I give you it's Price Carter. So Price, before we let you go, where can fans check you out at? Where's the YouTube channel, the X, Instagram, Facebook, and where's the website where people can check out your work?
Yeah, as you said, Arrowhead Addict is just the home for all my stuff. I also do a little bit of work for With the First Pick, which is FanSided's draft site. Really the big thing that's kind of my love child for the draft process is the Arrowhead Addict big board. The Chiefs specific big board, so all the prospects are kind of with a slight tilt towards the Chiefs, so less emphasis on quarterbacks and interior offensive line and corner, some of the places that the Chiefs have the most depth. And then we'll be doing a lot of coverage for the draft on our YouTube channel, which is just at Arrowhead Addict as well.
Price Carter, ladies and gentlemen, once again, always on a pleasure to have you on the show. We come back, a lot more going on here only on It's Last Call. Last Call of the Alcohol, only on the Last Call Podcast.com.